Welcome to the latest episode of WFH, the New Reality Podcast. This episode contains a guest interview. My guest today is T. Morris. T. Morris has been working for over 15 years in the field of social media and podcasting, and he's regarded as one of the pioneers of podcasting. In fact, back in 2005, T. Morris was the first person to podcast a novel in its entirety. Since then, he has continuously worked as a professional social media expert and is also a prolific writer. His books include Podcasting for Dummies, Twitch for Dummies, Making YouTube Videos for Dummies Junior, Discord for Dummies, Social Media for Writers, and way back in 2009, All a Twitter, which I very affectionately remember. So it's a pleasure to introduce him today as my guest on this podcast. Welcome, T.
For having me, Ian.
It's great. So,
mics, baby.
So, I mean, we go back a long way. So, this isn't my first experience of speaking with T. Morris, but for some people, unless of course they've been living either under a rock or on a different planet, of course, they may not know who T. Morris is, and this is obviously going to be a completely new audience to this podcast. So, besides the things that I've just mentioned there in the introduction, T, and by no means the books that I've actually just mentioned as far as writing are concerned, that's not the complete repository of everything that you've ever done. So just share a little bit more background on yourself, on the different things that you've done in social media, writing and podcasting, just to give a little bit more contrast, really, and background to what you've done, just to help our audience a little bit more, please.
So, when it comes to social media, I've been there since the beginning. I am one of the old school vanguard, if you will. I was the first writer to podcast a novel from cover to cover. I started doing that around the same time that two other authors joined me in this adventure. It was myself, Scott Sigler, and Mark Jeffrey. Three of us. We affectionately called ourselves the Three Musketeers of podio books. And then for a while, it was myself, Scott Sigler, and J.C. Hutchins, and we were the Rat Pack of podio books, because we would constantly show up at events together, and we would promote that website. And really, I got into podcasting as a way to promote a sequel of the book that I was podcasting. I stumbled into this by accident. And the more I podcast, the more I enjoyed it. It appealed to the performer. And so, along with writing science fiction and fantasy, which I'm also known for, and the series that most people know me for is the series that I penned with my wife, Pip Ballantyne. We wrote a series, a six-book series together called The Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences. It's a steampunk series. The way I describe it, it's if you took the Avengers, and I don't mean the core five superheroes from Marvel. I'm talking about John Steed and Emma Peel. That should date me right there.
Yeah. The Avengers.
The real Avengers.
That's right. Yeah.
But it was I basically took those two characters and I put them in a steampunk setting. And my wife and I built this world, and since then we have from that six book series that we began nearly a decade ago, we've launched one spinoff series, a young adult spinoff series, and we're currently on book three of that. We launched a role playing game off of that, and we've had a really delightful time writing in this universe. We also have a podcast around it. It's called Tales from the Archives, which won several awards, including 2 Parsecs for Best Anthology. We've had a really good run with the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences. And while I've been doing science fiction and fantasy, I've also embarked on a full-time career in social media, not only in doing it for other people and doing it for their businesses, but also speaking on it, whether it's podcasting, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, a full social media strategy, and now I've become a champion of streaming. Now, I'm the first one to say, though, I am not what I would call a pioneer in streaming. I am the old guy in a very young market. I sometimes nickname myself Old Man Morris. The community at large, though, nicknamed me Twitch Dad, because as a very prominent streamer said, this guy wrote a book on Twitch. That's such a dad thing to do, and it stuck. So I've now become one of my monikers is Twitch Dad, and I wear it proudly. I have done streaming that has included cooking streams, to how to shave properly, to proper grooming for beards. I've done all that. And some people have said, this guy is answering questions my dad never asked, or I could never ask my dad. But I've pretty much gone from I still podcast, but now streaming has become another big component in my arsenal. And really, that's where I sum myself up. I've never stopped learning. I have seen what has worked. I've seen what hasn't worked. I've gone back to platforms that I think have had a resurge of use of application. And I'm learning to recognize where audiences reside for certain events, for certain goals you need to meet. And also, I feel like I'm broadening my skill set, because I continue to learn. I like to say to people, I write these books, whether it's Social Media for Writers, which we're currently working on the second edition on, Discord for Dummies, I write these books for myself. Because I need to have that reference in case I suddenly blank on something and go, wait, how do I do this again? And then I go, oh, that's right, I wrote a book on it. So I can go, like, give you a notebook, but sharing my notebook with everyone that can contact me. And just this morning, somebody pinged me and said, hey, T, I'm trying to get my donation link to work on my Twitch page, and I can't seem to get it to work. Am I missing a step somewhere? And I said, do you have my book in front of you? She was like, yeah. Okay. Turn to page 47. And she turned to page 47. She's like, oh, my God. I said, okay, try that. Sure enough, it's up and running now.
Yeah, my dream.
So, I mean, and that's why I do what I do. There has been – I have gotten some pushback, especially with Twitch for Dummies. I've gotten some pushback that people are like, oh, this guy is doing a get-rich-quick kind of book. And I'm like, that's not this book. None of my books, whether it's Podcasting for Dummies, whether it's the aforementioned All of Twitter, which, man, it surprises me how many people still bring that book up.
Yeah,
But Podcasting for Dummies, All of Twitter, even Twitch for Dummies, I'm the first one to say in the books themselves, don't quit your day job. Yeah. And making this a day job is not easy. It's possible.
Hmm.
There's nothing quick about success in podcasting. Or success in social media. This is a long game. And it's nice because I finally heard a nonprofit tell me that one day. And it was a nonprofit I was working with in a charity stream. The head of streaming basically said, yeah, we're in this for the long haul. And I just went, God bless you. Somebody finally gets it. And so that's what I do. I try to inform people that this technology is not intimidating. It's just, and there's going to be a learning curve.
Yeah. So, as you know, T, this podcast is all about working from home, being creative, as you are yourself, and the challenges, of course, that are unique to that, as well as obviously the current place that we're all in at the minute with this COVID crisis. So, Let's just focus on a little bit more on the creative side of things. How important would you say is creative expression for an individual?
Creativity keeps you sane. I make no bones about it. Creativity, with the current COVID-19 crisis, I have written more than I have in the past 2 years put together. I was finishing Discord for Dummies when things started to hit.
Yeah.
Right after Discord for Dummies, I started work on the second edition of Social Media for Writers. Then the fourth edition of Podcasting for Dummies kicked in. And while all this is going on, Pip and I are talking about the third book in the Verity Fitzroy series, which is a spinoff series from the Ministry of Period Currency. And while all that's going on, just yesterday, I put out the feelers to my publisher about whether or not Twitch for Dummies could get an overhaul in 2021. And he said, you need to put together a proposal list for it, because there is a possibility that may happen.
Yep.
And if that were to happen, that would mean that I would be going from one consecutive contract to another consecutive contract with the For Dummies people since 2019, because I had Twitch For Dummies come out then, and then they contracted me to do a segment of YouTube For Dummies Jr., and then they contracted me for Discord For Dummies, and then they contracted me for the fourth edition of Podcasting For Dummies. If I could land another contract with Twitch For Dummies, that has been probably the most steadiest work I've had. And the point I'm getting at is that all this has kept me sane.
Yeah.
Well, I have friends who are like, the walls are closing in, they're starting to, and I'm like, well, you know what? If you've ever felt that you've had a book inside of you, now is the time to write it.
To do it.
Now's the time to sit down and do it.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish people would, because then people would get a look at what it's like to be me. And what I mean by that is,
yeah,
it happened this morning. I was playing my video games as usual, and some folks in the stream were basically telling me, you need to dedicate more time to this. Just a few minutes here and a few minutes there. And I said, you don't understand. You have never walked a day in my shoes. As soon as I'm done here, I've got something else to do. And then as soon as I get that done, I got to move on to something else. And as soon as that gets done, I have my day blocked out. And I'm making up, at the time of this recording, the day before, I had a migraine. So I was completely knocked out for the day. Which means not that I have to do what I was planning for today. I've got to make up for the lost time from yesterday. And so, yeah, there's a lot of stuff on my editorial desk. And while some people go, well, you're stretching yourself too thin, at the same time, it's I enjoy it. I enjoy the grind. I enjoy the crunch. So creativity is important because it keeps you engaged. And you suddenly find, after you've created whatever it would be, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a stream, whether it's a chapter or short story, you look up and it's like, oh, I've got to get something to eat. And you don't necessarily lose track of time, but you have something to focus on.
But I think as well, from this aspect, creativity, it brings fulfillment and satisfaction to the person, because you can see the end result of something that you've created. Yeah,
I would agree. But the hardest thing about creativity in the workplace is that your higher ups want to see the finished product now.
Yeah.
And if they don't see it happening straight away, they're like, why isn't this working?
Yeah.
And they take it from the perspective of time is money. And because of that, you have very little creativity in the workplace. That being said, one of the most creative jobs I ever had full time was with this organization called code.gov, and they were a White House initiative from the Obama administration.
Yeah.
And I segue into this because I want to talk about creativity at the workplace and about how you have to have a boss with the right vision or the understanding of creativity and the worth of it. My boss was a guy named Alvin Salehi. He is the former senior tech advisor for the White House. And he's the guy that basically wrote the federal source code policy. You can look it up. It basically encourages federal agencies in the United States to, instead of commissioning new software, commissioning software that is open source and then sharing it amongst themselves and then eventually sharing it with the United States, with the American people. And my boss was extremely creative. So he wanted me to create what he called a hype video, something that would get people excited about code.gov. That's all he told me. He said, I want you to create a hype video. And I said, well, what do you want in it? He goes, no. I just told you, I want a hype video. You figure it out. because I, and he did that because at our job interview, what got me the job as chief of communications at Code was he saw one of my book trailers and fell in love with it. Right. And he said, so who did all the work for you? And I said, nobody. I wrote it. I directed it. I edited it. He was like, you did all this on your own. He was like, yeah. So when he said he wanted a hype video, I was like, okay. Can you give me any kind of guidance? He goes, yes, no longer than a minute. I said, fine, challenging. And I spent an entire day creating this hype video. And it was, and the reason why it took me all day was that I was doing time-lapse photography, which was something he didn't ask for. I just decided to do it. And he saw the cut and he was like, this is exactly what I want. I said, well, I got one more I want to show you. And this is what happens when you get a creative guy like me, a little too creative. I created a video just for us in code.gov. And because it was all time-lapse photography, I basically did a spoof of the intro of the United States versions of House of Cards.
All right.
And the intro, it's all time-lapse photography.
Yeah.
All this stuff. My project manager was convinced that this was the hype video that I was pitching. And he was like, we can't put that on there. That's a copyright violation. I said, this. and my boss is a huge fan of both versions of House of Cards.
Right.
Like, this is great. And I said, well, download a copy for yourself, but we can't share this anywhere.
Brilliant. Now,
he encouraged, and that's what you need for real success.
Yeah.
Boss that understands the power of creativity.
Now, if you're a creative working from home, and some might be in this situation now, possibly for the first time, what are some of the unique challenges that such a person would have to deal with? Maybe from your own experience, if you will.
So the biggest challenge is just keeping a regular schedule. And you'll hear me often go back to Code. And it's because that was my first truly remote, I want to say about 80 to 90% of what I did was all from home.
Yeah.
Because on the government level, it is encouraged to work remote if you can. Because that way it saves money and for taxpayers for properties and things like that. You just basically do the home, provided you have a secure connection, et cetera, et cetera. So one day of the week, we would come into the office and we wouldn't meet. The rest of the time, we did everything on Google Hangouts and we worked from home. And the first challenge that I figured out was that it felt great in that first week of working from home, when I could sleep in till roughly 7, 8 o'clock, because I didn't have to really check in until 9. But then I was starting to notice, you know what? I'm off. I feel off. And that was because the previous 6 months I was coming into the office. I had to get up at 5, make sure I could catch the train at 6, so I could be in the office between 8 and 8:30.
Yeah.
I said, you know what? I'm gonna maintain that schedule. And by maintaining the same schedule I would have in an office at my home, that made a world of difference.
Yeah.
Second thing that you have to do, and this is especially for people who are married or married with small ones.
Yeah.
You have to say, no, dad's working. Or no, honey, I'm working. One time too many, I had to say that to my wife. I love her dearly. But when she said, hey, I need you to, I'm like, no, you don't. I'm not here. I am at the office. And it took her about a month to adjust to that.
Yeah.
Then instead of saying, honey, I need you to dot, 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 it would be like, honey, do you have a moment? Now, if I had a moment, sure, I'd drop everything because that's me. But what I noticed in keeping that schedule, and that's not just in clocking in and making sure that I was on office time,
yeah,
but promptly at 5 o'clock, I'm like, I'm off. Now, if it was a project that I was really invested in, sure, I'd clock in the extra hours. But keeping that schedule is essential. And when I say keeping a schedule, I do mean shaving, taking a shower, brushing your teeth,
yeah,
flossing. I mean,
everything.
Yes, take care of yourself. because otherwise it feels like you're on summer vacation.
By
having those routines, it makes the segue from working from home far easier.
Some people I've heard, once they shut the door behind them, they, on the outside of the door, they have a sign on saying working or do not disturb or something of that nature. Yeah. Because it must be difficult to be in that situation where all of a sudden, see, as far as children and the wife's concerned or family, you're at home. That's the thing, isn't it? So they've got to learn. The family's got to learn to detach themselves from that, to be able to have that demarcation. Okay, so T, for example, T's at home, but T's working. T's in his office. T's working on the project, etc. Yeah.
When my daughter was younger, that and I would occasionally work from home. That was really tough for her to wrap her brain around.
Yeah.
But one thing I did learn from those earlier years with working from home on the odd occasion was twofold. One, I would actually clock in more hours, and two, I was way more focused. Because when I was expected to be in the office at this one job every day, and whenever I would get work done, but I noticed that I would get a lot less of it done. Because I would have people that would come by, as you want to do, and they want to be social.
Yeah.
And they're chit-chatting away. And I'm trying to get stuff done. I'm trying to be just as productive at the office as I am on the occasion when I work from home. But I felt rude, because what I was trying to do, I was basically talking to this person while checking the social media. Talking to this person and then, you know, looking at my next blog post, you know, I mean, and doing that, it made me a better multitasker.
Yeah.
Downside, I did not get half as much done. And another benefit of working from home is that you will, and this is a quick story I can share, is you know that the resources you have at home are the ones that you need to get done. On my first day, as a full-time social media professional, they wanted me to work on a video. And I said, I realized that I just got here, but I have to go home. And they were like, why? And I said, because I've got an entire video editing suite at home and I can go on ahead and I can do this. And that was a huge amount of trust that they did for me on that first day. But I went home, came back the next day, showed them the video, and they refused to believe that I had actually worked on this video. They basically said, this isn't the same footage you walked away with. And I said, yeah, it was. This is the exact same footage. I just had the right tools at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's one of the other advantages, is that you know what resources you have to pull from it.
Yeah. Now, if someone chooses the path of working from home, what would you say are some of the essential characteristics then that a person either needs to have or needs to develop? Which is a little bit of a follow-on from talking about scheduling, because it's a completely different environment once you put yourself in there.
Well, scheduling, anybody can do scheduling. Anybody can schedule. Do you have the self-discipline to meet that schedule?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, self-discipline is at the top of the list. There are days where, when I was working from home, I didn't feel like working. I just wanted to get up, and I wanted to plant myself in front of my PS4 and just spend the day, you know, because man, sometimes it feels good to unplug. But you got to have the self-discipline not to do that. There's also a sense of dedication to the work. And that makes you sound like you're one of those eager beavers in the office that's always trying to please the boss. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about, I have been given a job, and this is my responsibility. And I'm going to make sure that I do this job. And while some people may not think it's important, whatever your job is, it's important enough that you have a job based around it. And you want to make sure that you're meeting that job to the best of your abilities. So it's not just a matter of self-discipline, it's also a dedication to the job. And since I mentioned video games, I think it's more than appropriate to mention these guys as an example. The COVID-19 crisis really began, I would say, in Seattle. It began in the United States in Seattle, Washington. And Seattle, Washington is where the headquarters of my favorite video game, Bungie, is located. That's the video game developer's name is Bungie. And since the beginning of this COVID-19 crisis, where people were forced to, you know, basically give social distance, work from home and things like that, these individuals, these developers and these content creators have continued to make content for this video game that I play, Destiny. They make content on a weekly basis. And this is in video games, which is a huge market,
yeah,
which is huge demands on it, and is technically it's mind-blowing what they're doing, and yet they're doing it from home. And it's because every one of them have said, we have a job to do, and if we don't do it, we're gonna lose our audience.
Mm.
So that's by dedication. No matter who they are at Bungie, they're making sure that they're getting the work done, and it's getting done well. Very well.
Yeah. Now, something we spoke about the other day, let's just see if we can cover this a little bit, about challenges. What challenges have you faced? What challenges have you faced, and how have you managed them, either now or in the past, if different things have cropped up from time to time? Just things that just might help our audience.
So perhaps the biggest challenge I had was when I was wanting to work from home from one particular job, and they were like, we need to see you in the office. And I said, why do you need to see me in the office? I'm still producing what you need. And their attitude is, we need to see you at your desk. And dealing with that level of frustration, considering how much time is lost just in commuting, it's hard to process, especially when you know what you can accomplish when you're working from home.
Yeah.
Now, as far as challenges from working from home itself, apart from the ones that I've already mentioned, I think the biggest one goes back to the example I just gave, which is people really are skeptical. They are still very skeptical. Really, how much are you getting done at home? How much are you getting done at home? And it's very easy for people higher up to not only dismiss that you're getting stuff done, even though you have the paper trail to show I'm getting stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
That in a nutshell can be very hard to sell. And something, as we touched on earlier in this podcast too, is when you have bosses that go, what does this position of creativity bring to us, right? I had a job that lasted 8 days. 8 days. And it lasted 8 days because one of the CEOs found out that a CEO underneath them hired me. And not only did he not know or understand the impact of social media on business, he dismissed it. He found it to be a distraction. He told me as much at my orientation when he found out what I was.
Yeah.
And this was in 2014. This wasn't like in 2009 or 2007, 2014. And this one CEO said, I find social media a waste of time. Why would I be interested in what someone is having for lunch? Those were his exact words to me. And I held that job for 8 days because I was then told by the CEO who hired me, I've been told we're being pushed into a different direction. In other words, the CEO told the lower CEO, you're going to fire this guy now.
Yeah.
And I held it up for 8 days. Ironically, they did advertise the position again, but they gave it a different title. It was the same exact position. But I'm sure somebody went to that person, whoever got the job, and said, whatever you do, when you meet the CEO of corporation XYZ, don't mention the word social media and that you're doing it. Just say you're in marketing. And you still have that. You still have people that have no desire to do anything new because the wheel's not broken. Why fix it?
Yeah.
And so struggling with that, struggling with what creativity brings to a business, it happened at my last job. My last job, I was basically made redundant. And I was told by the people higher up than me, we're hiring some people from New York. They know what they're doing. And within 3 months, everything that I had built fell apart. And now their social media is right back to where it was before I even got there. So to me, that speaks volumes. Making that leap of faith for some higher ups is very difficult. But when you find and that would be the advice that I would give to anybody that wants to get into a creative position in the corporate workspace, I would say the first thing you've got to ask the people above you is, how seriously do you take this? How seriously do you take social media? What are your expectations? Because for many people, they believe that these creative outlets are turnkey success stories, and they're not. They're all in for the long haul.
Yeah. So right at the beginning of the show, T, we mentioned all about your writing, the books that you've done. What projects are you working on now?
Well, like, what am I not working on?
Indeed.
So at the time of this recording, I am writing the fourth edition of Podcasting for Dummies. It's going good guns. I'm very pleased with the change that we're making, and it's also pretty neat to see, just in the short span between the third edition and the fourth edition, how much has changed, all for the better. That's been a lot of fun. On the fiction side of things, I'm working with my wife on The Curse of the Monkey God, which is the third installment of the Verity Fitzroy series, which is a spinoff of the Ministry of the Princes. And we're going to get to that as soon as my wife and I are done with the second edition of Social Media for Writers, which we're actually independently producing. And that's going to be a terrific project to finish up, because we had terrific success with the original Social Media for Writers, but it has been 5 years, and in internet terms, that's about 1,000 years. So we're getting caught up, and we're getting everything updated in the book. And then after that, we will see where the chips fall.
Great. So T. Morris's books can be found on Amazon and in all good bookshops, and of course at tmorris.com. So if you're listening to this on YouTube, please consider subscribing and hit the notification bell so you don't miss a thing. The audio podcast is also available in all major podcatchers, and some are listed in the show notes. If you'd like to support the podcast, there are two options to do so. The listener support link in the YouTube video description will allow you to make a PayPal donation. The second option is the podcast GoFundMe page. If you make a donation, it will be appreciated, and it will help to keep the podcast on air. So thanks for watching if you're watching this on YouTube, and if you're listening via your favourite podcatching app, thank you for taking the time to listen. So we'll catch you again next time, and we'll have another guest talking about WFH and all things creative. So thank you for listening, and take care.